You ready, KP?
Let's do it.
Ready, Mr. Matt?
Yep, let's go.
Perfect. Welcome back, everybody, to another Launch It podcast. It's been a while since we've done one of these, and we're excited. Different format, different view, different look. We're going to do some pretty cool video editing from what I'm being told. As always, I'm Matt.
We got myself, Kirandeep. And today we're joined by Matt Winchester from Foodbyte. And we're going to be talking a lot about food safety and what kind of goes behind the scenes and, you know, how, you know, companies go about their safety procedures and whatnot.
Processes and all that kind of stuff. We even got a fancy mic now in front of our camera. And it's going to be a little bit longer format. It's, you know, we're not going to cut it down to just 20 minutes. We're going to have an hour and we're going to split it up. So you're going to get some really good content. So Matt, maybe start off, tell us a little bit about Foodbyte, what you do, and a little bit about food safety so we can get this hot topic started.
Sure thing, guys. So what Foodbyte does is we work with companies that are saying like, hey, I got this problem where it breaks into two categories. One, I'm being told that I need to have a food safety program. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I have some resources available, but I'm kind of like in this standstill where I don't have the ability to move forward. Could you kind of explain to me what this is and how I get into food safety? And then you have the other classification of companies, which are, they've been doing food safety. They understand it. They got it down to a science, but when it comes down to it, they say like, I'm dumping a lot of resources into the management and adherence compliance component of my food safety program. I just got to find some way that I can save some money on this because it's just such a burden to my company that it's just taking kind of its own life over at the enterprise level for my organization. So is there just some way that we can move this to a digital program or some way that I can like save some time back, claw some time back on my employees and myself just so I can drive more value out of what we're doing here? So what we do is we help those companies get to the compliance level and then help them adhere with what our software platform does is just disperse notifications on what you need to do and how you go about doing it. And then we compile all that data together, present it back to the company for reports weekly, monthly, quarterly, and whenever an auditor comes in, whether that be government or third party, we can organize that into data and present it to them coherently in the way that they need to have it.
So I guess that was a good information, but I guess just from a basic level, what is food safety? Because when I think of food safety, kind of an outsider, I kind of just think about, you know, food that's at our grocery store, make sure it has this, like the safety checks. But what is actually meant by food safety?
Sure. So food safety is, and I was just talking to somebody earlier about it, like a lot of people think about like food safety, like, oh, I bought this head of lettuce and it looks a little brown. That's kind of gross. Like maybe that's dangerous. And it's like, it's never something as simple as that. Like there was just a recall on sandwich meat and it's the Listeria that happened in the sandwich meat. So you look at it and go like, oh, this is like Listeria doesn't have a smell, doesn't have a taste, but it can definitely kill you. So Listeria is one of these problematic germs that we have in food. It's very common. It's pretty much everywhere and it just reproduces like crazy. And unfortunately, when you get it, it's not one of those, if you think of like E. coli, you get it like next couple of days, kind of get sick, get the flu and everything like that. Listeria's incubation phase is 90 days. So you're going to be waiting for a long time until that ticking time bomb goes off and you get really sick. So rolling it back to like, what is food safety? It's kind of a set of principles of how do we determine risks of foodborne illness, whether that be chemical, biological, such as germs, physical, such as like broken glass and food. How do we identify those kind of risks? How do we isolate them and how do we eliminate them? And that's kind of the key components that go into any food safety philosophy or your written program all over the world.
Which is interesting because when we were looking at food safety for the warehouse over for amplifying cargo, when I asked that question out and I went out, like I went to the city or the government, I went, hey, I want a certificate for my warehouse to be food certified. And they're like, you really don't need one. Like, you know, it's up to your customer what their requirement is. So the only one we give one is for meat. Everything else is pretty much dry, secure, blah, blah, blah. There's nothing really there. And I found that very interesting that the government doesn't regulate that. And they said, you know, the people I talked to, they go, we want food grade warehouse. So I asked a qualified question. What is a food grade warehouse, right? Mm-hmm. And then they go, well, we don't know. There's a certification for it. And then the FDA says it's good. I'm like, okay, who from the FDA? And they're like, well, you know, the people. I'm like, which people? Yeah. And then we went down this rabbit hole. Eventually, I came to a spot where someone told me that I needed the BRCC, I forget the acronym. And apparently, it's like the top level for food safety. And when I would approach them, they're like, well, no, you're not really ready for this yet because you haven't done all these other layers to get to this point. So I started backtracking, and then they said, you know, HACCP. So you go look at the HACCP, and they're going, I'm going, okay, what's HACCP? It's the same thing. They're like, well, you're not really ready for this. And I'm like, what do I need to be ready? They're like, you need to put something in your warehouse and move it. So if you have a blank warehouse and you're trying to move food, you can't really do it. You need to do something first, which I found very interesting, that food safety is not so clear cut where the government regulates that. Maybe, why is that, Matt? Like, why is it so difficult to find an answer to go, I give a food grade warehouse and me saying, yeah, I have this certification.
Sure thing. So this is like the, this is a very common question I hear all the time is like, why do I, like, what is food safety certification? What is HACCP? Why do I have to do this? Why do the meat guys do it and now I have to do it? Or why do the meat guys do it and then I don't have to do it? So it ultimately breaks down to, I'll go into a bit of the history here and to kind of surmise how we got to this point of complicated questions. So originally, a long time ago, we realized that meats can be very dangerous if you handle them incorrectly. There's all kinds of pathogens that you can get through meats that it can transfer to human beings. So we decided that in the United States and Canada, we decided, hey, we need to have some kind of way that we, again, detect, isolate, and eliminate these kind of biological hazards. And then it was actually, here's the funny thing, is HACCP, that program, that protocol that was defined for doing that specific thing, was developed by NASA for astronauts to get food up in space.
Really?
And then, yep. And then we just basically co-opted it from the food industry because we saw like, hey, like this is a great way that we can sit there and try to identify what the problems are, what are the real problems, and then how we get rid of them.
So HACCP is like NASA ready, good to go qualification.
Like NASA invents all kinds of crazy stuff. And like some of it does get used in the common, like not just food industry, but kind of like telecommunications and everything, right? Like GPS, for example. I came out of NASA. So
we're good to ship out meat out to Mars.
Yeah.
not yet, but someday maybe.
Elon Musk is working on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think he's thinking about food safety when he's shipping out to Mars though.
Yeah, that guy, like he is just, man, like that guy just comes up with all kinds of crazy thought-provoking ideas. Yeah. He's kind of a thought leader on a whole bunch of different things. But
go ahead.
Getting back to like food safety here, the reason why the meat guys kind of started doing is we realized there was a serious problem with meat. Then that grew to fish. So then fish guys started, like all the fish processing plants started adopting it. Then after fish, Canada went through and kind of had sweeping changes where we started doing, I think it was some correct, I don't know, somebody's got, if I say this wrong, somebody's going to go on my blog and blast me out anyways for it. So it's like 1970s, roughly. Canada started doing what's known as the it was right around that time phrase, the regulated, non-regulated space. So then in Canada, it was fish, meat, chicken, egg, honey, maple, fresh fruit and vegetables were all considered to be regulated products. So that means that if you dealt with these kind of products, you had to have a food safety program, end of discussion. So that means if you were a warehouse, if you were a pack house, if you were a grower, if you were a processor, if you were doing any of those activities, you required a food safety program. And then the flavor that we chose in Canada for most of the food safety programs was called the Food Safety Enhancement Program. And this is where things get really confusing because HACCP is like the go-to standard bread and butter for all things food safety. Everybody does HACCP. Everybody knows. If you say HACCP in the food industry and the person doesn't know what you're talking about, they're not part of your community. They're just some outsider. Yeah.
But funny enough, a lot of people don't know about it. When I ask them, I'm like, HACCP. They're like, I don't know that one. It sounds familiar. I'm like, oh, that's not good. Like, from what I learned so far, you should at least know that much, right?
Yeah, yeah. Even sales guys know what HACCP is in the food industry. So like, as soon as people do go, I don't know what that is. Like, is that some kind of berry or something? I just, no. Stay away. So yeah, like getting into the meat and potatoes here, to throw out a funny pun, but
I was going
to
say that's a good pun out there.
Yeah, it's so HACCP is the protocol we use, but it's not the standard. What I mean by that is, so things get like muddy when you're in the United States and you say this is beer, and then you're in Canada and you're like, no, this is beer. Well, who's right? So is it that both beers are beer, or is it one beer is another beer? So then we get into what's known as national commodity specifications. So Canada has its own way of declaring different commodities and saying like, this is what cheese is, this is what beer is, this is what a steak is. And then the United States may not have the same specifications of what we have for certain commodities.
I was going to interrupt you. Is that why like certain things can't be called cheese in Canada when it comes to the US? Yes. It's called like, what's that yellow, the yellow freaking stuff. And then they can't call it cheese. They call it, something different.
Yeah. I know some of them, they put like, it's a sandwich. You don't call it cheese. I know what you're talking about. One of them, I just says like sandwich something.
Yeah. It's like a weird. So is that why they have certain classifications for certain things? Right. So
yeah.
We what we call cheese for them is not really cheese, and what we call whatever, it's something different for them.
Yeah, an example of this is like in the United States most recently, they've gone to what's called like almond milk, almond milk, soy milk, coconut milk, and they're saying like none of these are milk. Okay, ooh. Like all these things are not milk because these things don't lactate. And then Canada just kind of like looked at them and like, are you serious? Like, we've always called them that way. So like, what's the point of changing it? So it's just the United States wants to change its standards. We have sovereignty as our own country. We can come up with our own standards. But that because of that, we also have sovereignty over what goes into what Canada, across Canada, considers to be a food safety program. And HACCP by itself only covers the hazards of what you're doing and how you isolate them and how you eliminate them. But then on top of that, you have the two other main constituencies of a food safety program is what's known as, well, you guys probably know this one down pat, traceability. So traceability is like something everybody in the market needs. If a food company doesn't have a traceability program today, they have to seriously go out and get one soon. And the other one is what's called a preventive controls program, or like just preventive controls is another way. This is also known as GMPs, general manufacturing practices.
Yeah.
They're also known as standards or prerequisites. They have all kinds of different names, but they all mean the same thing, which is what do you do at your facility to make sure that it's a safe facility to produce food in? So an example is like, what's your sanitation program? Sanitation program is part of your preventive controls. What is your pest control program? So your pest control program is part of your preventive controls. And all of that gets linked to your HACCP plan, where it's like, you don't have to monitor pests as like a minute by minute action in your HACCP program, or like a, you know, hour by hour action in your HACCP program, because it's covered under your preventive controls. We have a program for how we eliminate these kind of hazards. So we don't have to worry about rats jumping into your soy products. We don't have to worry about the roof falling in. We don't have to worry about, you know, lights breaking and falling into your product. So we have these programs in place to have like a general regular scheduled routine maintenance of the facility. And then we have all of this documented and monitored over here, so we don't have to worry about doing the HACCP. Whenever you make a product, you have to measure critical control points. You have to log a whole bunch of things, sign stuff off. So just don't worry about it. We're taking control of it in this preventive controls.
So, but that's an interesting thing, because for me, it only sounds like the manufacturer or the producer of food has to have that HACCP. What really happens after it leaves that facility doesn't fall on that protocol anymore. So you got someone like, you know, XYZ carrier comes in and goes to a HACCP facility, picks up all this milk and cheese and milk, as they will call it in the US, and they don't have a HACCP program. They bring it to their warehouse. They're going, oh crap, we're going to cross-dock it or LTL this and break it up. Yeah. And now we've broken that chain of command. So, but there's, how does that regulation carry over to the next person along that supply chain? Is there carriers that have special specifications for food handling when they're handling food? Because I don't think so. At least I haven't seen anything that is a requirement to haul food. And it sounds like it should be.
Some companies do get food safety compliance for handling food. Like I was dealing with a company today that dealt with like low temperature fermented products. So like depending on like what you're working with, some companies do need food safety compliance. There's like some major trucking companies that I can think of off the top of my head in Canada that have like some pretty serious food safety programs for each of their reefer trucks that they move product around in. So it like, and I'm going to tell you something, guys, like this is the weird thing about food safety is it depends on where you're at the chain and the supply chain. And it depends on where that supply chain is branching to. If you're dealing with a retailer, you're getting a poke in the eye as soon as you say like, I don't want to do food safety. They're just not like, they're going to just not deal with you if you refuse to do food safety. And that doesn't matter if you're a trucking company. That doesn't matter, you know, like if you're a warehouse, like you have to have some level of food safety you're dealing with retailers, because they're the final bridge to ultimately the broad consumer of Canada.
Absolutely. So,
When it comes back to your prior question, when it comes to regulation, the Canadian government absolutely regulates food safety in Canada. There's a Canadian Food Inspection Agency that regulates all food in Canada. And then on top of that, for natural health products and drugs in Canada, that's Health Canada regulates all of that space. But for with regards to like how they go about regulating it is the specific law that they use is called the Safe Food for Canadians Regulations, which recently rolled out here in Canada. And what that does is it gives the Canadian Food Inspection authority to say, look, if you're going to make more than $100,000 a year as a private entity and you're going to move product across provincial borders, then that means that you have to get a federal license to do so. Because products in, say, like Nova Scotia may not be the same as like what the provincial government calls X in Nova Scotia, may not be the same as what the provincial government calls X in Ontario, for example. So if you're dealing with provincial standards rather than federal standards, we have to federalize your product to make sure that everybody falls under it. And I say that because like, here's a really weird example that I saw with a company is there was a company in Nova Scotia selling a product across Canada, but that one of their ingredients, just one of their ingredients in a fermented product was not federally registered. It was provincially registered under Nova Scotia because we have a separate program for meat. So in Nova Scotia, you can choose to opt into the provincial program or you can choose to opt into the federal program for meats. So then if you go with a provincial program, you're audited by provincial government employees, you're not audited by federal, but that means that if you use that product as an input ingredient to another product and then make that a federalized product and you get a license for it, somebody is going to stop you because they're going to be like, where did you get this from? That's a provincial supplier. That's a lower in the supply chain than you are. You can't, like, they're just out of specification for what you are. You just can't sell that good across Canada. Sorry.
It amazes me that there's it's not administered federally. Like it should be just be one entity running it all, right?
Yep.
Like because I think even in Europe they have one entity, like the European food, and it's everybody has to adhere to those rules. And we can't even do that in Canada. And Canada's and Europe's not even like one country.
Like, So things get like complicated because like Canada has like a federal specification, but then some of the provinces opt out of certain specifications, like Nova Scotia, for example. But then like Nova Scotia,
You're picking on them.
Well, I'm from Nova Scotia. I can pick on us blue nosers as much as I want. So,
I guess if we do want to go in a uniform direction, why does the government allow for some provinces to opt out? Shouldn't it be just like you have to be in it and that's it, or like why is it that flexibility?
This is a great question. The ultimate thing comes down to intellectual property over grading specifications. And I know that sounds really strange and abstract. So what happens is like, say if you're in Nova Scotia and I cut like a bunch of random meat up and I go, this is a steak. And this is clear, like you can look at it and you're like, no, that's not a steak. That's like a hoof or like something that makes like absolutely no sense. Yeah. So you're like, no, this is a grade A steak in Canada. So by opting into the federal standards and having the federal government come in and inspect me, subjecting my company to their inspections, their standards, their protocols, and getting audited by Canadian government employees federally, that means that I can adopt their grading standards because that means that I'm meeting their standards, which means that if I sell a steak and I say it's a grade A steak, I'm certified to say that it's grade A steak. So if I say, hold up now, I don't want to sell grade A steaks, this whole Canadian federal standard is a bunch of hullabaloo. Like I'm in Nova Scotia, I don't want to do that. I just want to sell like locally. I don't want to adopt those federal standards. Can I please just do this instead? Nova Scotia is one of the provinces that permits that.
How many provinces are there that permit that?
To my knowledge, it's Nova Scotia and New Brunswick. And I think there was another province. I'm not sure if it was Ontario or Manitoba, but it was one of the central provinces that had it for a while, but I think they turned it off.
So most of Canada is,
unified.
Yeah. So
only the East Coasters.
Yes, I know. Those terrible Maritimers holding everyone back. I apologize.
Protecting the lobster, protecting the seafood.
That's right. So yeah, like it's strange that some provinces opt in and opt out of like certain things, but it's just kind of a market of like, is there a lot of like local suppliers of doing X that don't want to participate in a federal government standard? And if there's enough lobbying, then the provinces get their way. So it just kind of depends on the situation, I guess. But if I said like, this is ultimately the reason why I, as an individual, I don't really know. And I bet if I asked the government why, they would just try to play email phone tag with me and just being, oh, talk to this guy over there, talk to that guy over there. And I never get an answer.
Please hold, that's a transfer for you.
Yeah. Oh God, no, please.
Let me get you over to our next office, and we're going to switch you over to this person. Oh, you got the wrong person, the wrong department. We'll switch you over to that person.
We love the Canadian government, by the way.
We do.
Oh, yes. I love the Canadian government, too.
We all just say in jest. But so food safety. So how would a farm go about it? Because if you're loading right directly from a farm, it's from the outside right into a truck. How do they regulate the food safety on that piece?
That's a great question. So it depends on what the farm activities are. So like, this is a weird, I was at, I think I talked about this like last year at the OCBC in Niagara, where I was like, hey, like, what do you guys do? And I was talking to a bunch of beer companies and they were like, well, we're beer companies. And I was like, oh, cool. And like, I started to talk to them about a bunch of different things. And then we came to realize like some of these beer companies are beer companies and they're also restaurants. And they're also, some of them process meat. And also like some of them do like different activities. Yeah. So farmers, and I'm critical about people that use a broad classification of like anybody that just grows turnip or like does a certain activity means a farmer, that you can be, especially now with how technology has been introduced into the workplace, you can be multiple things at the same time. Like some of our initial customers, for example, were farmers that were regulated by the Canadian government federally, that you had to have what's known as Canada GAP, Canada Good Agricultural Practices, in order to be a farm in Canada and to sell produce. So this is just like Canada GAP is a great program for all the farmers in Canada that you can go into, and it tells you like, hey, like if you're going to use water, this is the type of water you have to use. If you're going to use fertilizer, these are the fertilizers. These are the type of pesticides and herbicides that you can use and ones that you cannot use. And this is like how you grow your crops. Here are all your monitoring forms to fill them out. And this is how the program works. So it's administered by the Canadian government that everybody has to have it. It's regulated, by the Canadian government that everybody that participates in farming has to have it. And it's like an internationally accepted program. So if you grow like cherries in Canada, then somebody in London can buy your cherries and they know that you meet the certain specification that's internationally accepted. So it's a great program, but at the same time, farmers, funny bunch, not necessarily do they just grow turnips sometimes, or like say, for example, some of our early customers are like, yeah, I have orchards of apples and I'm an apple grower. And also I do all these other products where it's like, I also turn my apples to cider and I turn them to apple juice and I turn them to apple chips and I turn them to blah, 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 blah. And you go, cool, like you didn't grow those things though. So you're not a farmer, you're a food processor. And they go, yeah, but I own this farm and I grow apples. And I'm like, yeah, but you're also a food processor. And food processors have higher specification than farmers, so you're a food processor. Because you're doing it in the same facility.
So if I'm classified as a farmer and I start doing other, so if I grow wheat out in my, and I can start creating wheat beer and then I don't have to follow the same rules as a manufacturer?
Now I'm biting my tongue here, because beer has an exemption in Canada. You don't need to have a food safety program for beer. You just need to have, if you're doing alcoholic beverages in Canada, all of them, to my knowledge, are completely exempted. All that you have to have is traceability.
We should start our own beer. Launch it beer.
Launch it beer. Coming to you soon.
So beer is exempt. So is that the same thing for other spirits and whatnot too? So you don't have your exempted? Okay. So that kind of makes sense, because they naturally just kill bacteria. But you can still get like a bad case of beer, I guess. And that's bad for you. You can get vinegar, like, wine.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you can get beer and I've dealt with some beer companies that have had like non-pasteurized beer has a funny chance of like, it can go and re-enter the pasteurization process and all your cans start blowing up like little rocket ships. So that can happen. Sometimes, you know, like you can have
like a little rocket ship, launch it.
That's a good idea. Commercial.
I threw that guy.
Non-pasteurized beer.
I threw that at you guys waiting for the self-promotion and you nailed it. Good job.
We're going to change the logo now. Instead of a rocket ship, it's going to be a beer can flying
there
up.
Oh man, like that's branding right there.
Yeah. All right, I guess maybe not beer then. So how does it work? Let's just say like at farmer's markets then when, you know, local, people, they package their own, you know, pickled carrots or whatever the case may be, their pies. I know they're kind of selling to the community, but at what point does it transition from, hey, we're just selling a couple apple pies to, okay, maybe we're pushing out 10 pies a day. At what point do you kind of have to start regulating yourself as individual or organization?
Yeah, because that goes to the last person too, right? It's like almost like a retailer at that point, because you're at a market, you have specific days that you're open, but I don't think the same rules apply when you're selling them and you're sitting out there, because I've seen cabbage sitting out there in the sun and you're like, oh, is this farm fresh? Is it okay at this point, right?
Yeah, retailers are pretty much exempt from food safety. Most of them, a lot of like the major retailers I'm thinking about are doing what's called a third-party certification. So third-party, I'm going to get into like this big kind of like hidden iceberg of food safety here. So we have government certification, and that's all done through the Canadian Food Inspection Agency. If you're a Canadian company, you have to participate. If you make more than $100,000 a year and you ship product cross border and you don't, and you're not under one of these exemptions, one of them being beer and spirits and whatnot.
Just to clarify on that point, you have to be a manufacturer. So warehouse, a guy who doesn't just warehouses for that company that doesn't need that government certification, correct?
I can look up the exact phrasing of it on the law, but I believe it's anyone that processes, ships, packs, labels, or there's one other one. It's evading me right now, but yeah, like warehouses do need to have like federal pack houses and federal warehouses need to be inspected, just like you brought up with the meat. So like meat is one of the requirements. So if you bring meat into your warehouse and you're like, oh, we're food now, then it's like, cool, you need to have federal inspection.
So if I was doing like tomatoes, if I get getting like produce through my warehouse, because I'm shipping an LTL, as an LTL company of that produce, I need to be that certified by CFIA, you're saying?
Yeah, if you're moving and transporting goods, you need to be certified under the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, so long as you're there's certain exemptions to that. One of them is like if you're just trucking raw product, to my knowledge, that's unopened. It's like open and like so. Say if you just had like a giant bin of tomatoes and it wasn't enclosed in a consumer packaged good, you know, it wasn't palleted and stuff like that. If it's just like giant open bins of tomatoes, you're exempt because it's like, dude, somebody's gonna clean them up and
put them in the anyways.
So like, don't worry. But yeah, like there's certain exemptions and little bubbles in the supply chain here and there where food safety is exempted from certain activities. But for the most part, it's a pretty good assumption to go into that if you're participating in food now under the Safe Food Canadian regulations, you need to have a HACCP plan, you need to have traceability, you need to have preventive controls.
Interesting. So I cut you off. Sorry, and you were talking about then we get into a funny situation, and I cut you into the
government. Yeah. So what happens is third party certification is kind of taking over in North America now. It started being very popular in Europe, particularly the one that you mentioned before, BRC. Yep. It's BRCGS is kind of like the world's first private food auditing standard.
Yep.
British Retail Consortium, and they kind of made like they kind of like rippled across the world where they said like, hey, like we're going to take food safety and bring it up to a federal standard. I mean, sorry, not a federal standard,
international.
An international standard above all other federal standards. So like if one guy, like say if the Europe is doing X and that's like a really good standard to go by, and it's kind of like being a thought leader ahead of and the head of space of whatever, and then Canada wants to move ahead on Y, then we're going to do both X and Y because it's above and beyond what everybody's doing. So there, it's this like wicked chase game that these private companies have with their food safety standards and making sure that it's maintained above everybody else. But because of that game, it's great if you have a food processor in downtown Toronto, that's BRC. Well, now all of a sudden you don't have to worry about Canadian certification. Like your BRC plan will fit to the Canadian standard guaranteed. And it's great because you can sell to any company anywhere in the world that's willing to accept your BRC products because you're certified to meet international standards. Yeah. So it doesn't matter if you're selling to Japan or Canada, United States or Europe or wherever, you're beating that standard guaranteed.
Which is funny because when I talked to the BRC guys, they said there's only like 6 companies in all of Canada are actually BRC certified.
I wouldn't believe that. I know 2 of them in Nova Scotia, so I've 6 in Canada. Like I don't know, like maybe Nova Scotia.
maybe because they said, well, the reasoning being is because the big guys do it.
Oh yeah,
and so the big guys encompass most of the food spectrum. So you got like someone like Sysco Foods, and they touch so much food across the country, and they're one of the bigger companies, I believe, that use that formula, right? I think it was 6 or like it was really like they told me to guess. I said like 1500, and I said, whoa, you're way off. It was something like I was shocked how low of a number it was. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was 6, could be 16 even, but what is more than 25? And I was quite, but when they went through the whole process of what's required, it was extensive. It was quite crazy. And then not only that, they said Costco was actually one step above the BRC. So if you want to do something with Costco, it's like you have to be a BRC plus level. And it was even harder to get into.
Yeah, Costco has their own form of food safety. And I think that's an interesting play, honestly, as a retailer, where you're kind of positioning
Absolutely.
yourself saying, like, we're going to do things our way and we're going to make sure. And so kind of going back to like how an agreed upon standard of like Costco versus like, well, why is Costco doing the same thing or more than BRC? And how come BRC knows what everybody else is doing and like staying ahead of the game? It goes into this international group called, and it's a journal that's created and updated every year called Codex Alimentarius. So Codex Alimentarius is this giant compendium of food safety knowledge of everything you could possibly imagine under the sun. And then what happens is you have groups such as GFSI, which is a global food safety initiative, use that as a book to dictate what international food safety standards should be. And then they certify, GFSI is the group that certifies companies such as BRC, SQF in the United States, Safe Quality Foods, for example, is another third party, or like Costco, where they'll I'm not sure I say that, but I don't know if GFSI actually certifies Costco. I don't know if Costco is a GFSI program, but it's, they'll go and certify these groups saying like, this is a known international standard that it should be like something that's forefront for international trade for food safety. So then that creates a great private auditing certification standard that you can say like, hey, like, I'm BRC, and you can openly as a company say that, and then everybody in the room knows who you are and knows what you do for food safety to go above and beyond. And that makes it really easy for you to conduct international trade. So it opens up the entire world as like your oyster to market and sell your product then.
Well, it seems like an easy way to segue, because you have, you know, the size of corporations now. So you go to someone like, you know, Mars Food, you go to someone like Nestle or Mondelez, or the list goes on. They should just be like, anybody that touches our food product, it should be XYZ regulated, and that's what it should be, and that's how it kind of sets the standard. Ideally, you want the government to kind of set the standard and regulate it and inspect all these places, but I don't know if they have the capacity or the ability to do all that and inspect to make sure that all the warehouses that are certified that are touching food, right?
Yeah. There'd be a huge chain of custody, like, in order to make sure that happens. It'd be like from start to finish, like where until the food gets to our like dinner plate. There's so many little components that it'd be like super hard to regulate it, I feel like.
Yep.
To keep
you are correct.
To keep each individual or company like accountable to make sure that they're withholding to the standards.
But it shouldn't be. I mean, like, I'm eating the food. Yeah. I want to make sure it's like. Now I'm worried to like eat anything. I'm gonna put like hand sanitizer on my food here in a second.
Oh, don't do that.
But I guess at this point, we're just blindly believing in the integrity of, I guess, the agents, the government agencies, or the third party verification that what we're having on our plates or what we're putting in our body is certified as good for us, right?
Nobody questions it.
I guess, or is there, for the average Joe, is there a way for us to verify of like the products
are more than the average Joe though?
And what, okay, maybe me. I'm just saying, average population. Is there a way to verify of like what I'm like the Ritz crackers I'm eating? Is am I able to kind of trace it back to a certain point to see, you know, where the ingredients came from?
Or like a tracing of like a trailer back to like the original piece, right?
Like was this Ritz ever docked at a warehouse or not?
Oh, I know that warehouse. I'm not eating from that warehouse.
To my knowledge, that's something that like companies can be forefronting and maybe build into like a label that they put on the product and show you as a consumer, but there's no requirement for them to kind of tell you who their suppliers are. It's actually a big thing in the food industry not to like to kind of withhold that information of who their suppliers are, because if you can get supply from a cheaper person and it may not be the greatest quality product, but that means that you get a better margin on the product that you produce, then it's all the better to do that.
That shouldn't be that way. You should be protecting the people, not protecting the
margin. I agree entirely.
That's capitalism.
That's capitalism. That's why you need government. This is why the government is a good piece. This is why we say thank you to the government, because they were help regulate that piece, right? Because business would just be going for the bottom line.
But I guess that's a podcast topic on itself. I guess capitalism versus like human.
The need. Food ethics.
Yeah.
Yeah. No. That is. That's actually a different can of worms. Because like, how do you know? And how? Because they can trace it back usually very quickly, but very rarely have you seen an outbreak of a food. Let's say we get listeria from an apple. I don't know if you can. I'm just throwing that out there. Can you? Actually, can you? Matt, do you know?
You can get listeria on like pretty much anything. The chance of you getting it on an apple, though, considering that they're waxed and they're like
Apples are waxed?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Why do you think they're so shiny?
I didn't know that.
I just thought that an apple was shiny.
They're waxed.
Really?
Yeah. So if you ever get an apple anywhere free, you actually like take an apple, like rub it down for a bit, and you'll see like that one spot, it actually like kind of turns like with all waxes like matte.
Really?
Yeah.
Yep.
Bananas? Bananas wax too? No. I know their bananas are fumigated because I know when we move bananas from the ports, you have to get those phyto certificates and all that kind of stuff.
Yep.
Which then you really think about it, is that really safe? Who qualifies that, those phytos that they're actually good quality fumigation?
I'm just gonna stop eating.
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. As I'm eating a cracker as we're talking here. Yeah, I was gonna say, let's drink it from an apple. You never see the in between ever get penalized for that listeria, because you know it's either A, the origin, or the destination that is at fault. You never see the in between supply chain ever get blamed for that outbreak.
Yeah. Or I guess is that something that happens in the back end? So let's just say, for you know, example, maybe Campbell is the one who's getting kind of the front end media coverage of like it's a breakout from their Campbell, but on the back end, does Campbell ever go back and kind of trace it back and give a penalty or any consequences to maybe like the transportation company or you know, a third party vendor they had that created a product on their end,
or have them validate and prove that they had the safety protocols they require in it?
Absolutely, both of those situations happen all the time. The only issue is that when something goes public to the media, so like when like you find out and like it's on CBC that there's been a major food recall, let's say it's Campbell's, for example, like the situation there is Campbell is trying to do like their own QA right now, and their own food, they bring in their HACCP manager and they're bringing their QA saying like, what happened? Was this us? Was this something we were doing? Was this the company we shipped it through? Was this the company that shipped it to us? Was this one of our suppliers? So they're trying to do what's called a root cause analysis, try to figure out what exactly happened. And then after they figured out what happened, that's when they say like, okay, we know what happened now. So now, say if it's us, so then we need to understand what's called bracketing and a recall, where you say like, okay, I'm going to say all the we know that this process problem that's us started at this period of time and ended at this period of time. That means that all lock codes we generated for that type of product for during this period of time, maybe could be different products depending on if you're sharing machines or whatnot. And the root cause of the problem, we're going to bracket all these lots, and then we're going to put those up for recall because we know that these ones are potentially affected as well. But if it's a supplier issue, then it's much more difficult, because if it works back to the supplier, then they go like, oh no, like now I need to figure out like everything we made with those ingredients. And then that calls in a question of like, if they get it through a food service company, now it's, did multiple things get infected? Because if we're getting on a truck and it's like got carrots and potatoes, and these are coming in like burlap sacks, and like, and if it was a temperature issue, maybe these things have got a temperature issue as well. So now we have to look at potatoes and carrots at the same time. So it can turn into like this very complicated issue. If it ever does get to the point of like, it is this guy over here, this little jerk farmer that like did it wrong or like something like that, then ultimately a lawsuit can be created against them. But until then, it's just hit the insurance company, get some money back, do the recall, just try to survive as a company. Because recalls are extremely damaging to companies. I've talked with, I don't even know how many companies where they say like, oh, like if I have a recall, just like whatever, I'll just recall my product and that'll be fine. But it's like in Canada, the average recall is like over $1 million worth of damage to a company. Like, do you get it? Like, I don't know. Do you get like $1 million liquid cash sitting in your bank account right now that you can just smoke? Like,
I guess there's insurance against it, right?
There's insurance against it. You can claim it, but like, it's also really expensive recall insurance. So, I don't think recall insurance is a great way moving forward, just expecting that you're going to recall one day. So
we know our product is not the greatest, so we're having this insurance protect us.
I've seen companies that have had multiple recalls and they get recall insurance and they just say like, it's just going to happen again someday. I know it. So it's scary, but it's like, you know, a real thing. Kind of getting back to your point here is like, sometimes it's suppliers, sometimes it's your own processes, like the hazards that are going to cause a recall, that like something happened and that got into the food. There's two types of origin points of hazards. One could be ingredients, so think of those as suppliers, and the other can be processes, so like what you're actually doing to the product. So it comes down to, what are you doing with the product? Like, did somehow your cleaning agent get into the product? Did like, you know, did it, it, you calibrated your X-ray machine improperly, and then somehow like metal filings got into the got into the product and it went right through. So that's kind of like a process related thing, ingredient related thing. It's like there's something like mold growing on this type of product and you didn't go like temperature treat it, or you didn't pH treat it correctly, and that somehow got through the product and you didn't scan it at the end, and now it's out there.
Hey Matt, I'm not gonna lie, you're making food a lot more scary for me right at this point. Cause I'm just thinking about it. Cause when you start talking about it, even like the food processing part, like I didn't realize out how many different.
Yeah, I mean, people would actually touch it.
It would be touching
not, like,
it.
Not that they touch not it, like, but like, yeah,
to get it to that point. So you're talking about all the food vendors, you're talking about like, you know, mm-hmm. just yep. like, let's talk about the soup scenario, canned soup. We're not gonna say the exact two cans. So we have a can of soup. So you got a meat vendor, you got a stock vendor, you got a vegetable vendor, and those vegetable vendors have specific, so I like this one vegetable inside there could have been from a celery guy up in Northern Quebec. This other celery that's inside the same could have been down from, you know, Florida, and then you got, and it's all, and how are you supposed to figure out which one's the one? So you just kind of go, I guess it's all of it, and then we're just gonna take it all back, right? Like, it's just boggling my mind thinking about it right now.
Yep,
that's crazy.
Yeah, I like how you're so calm about that. As you're eating your apple with full of wax.
Like, I guess on average, how many recalls happen in a given year in Canada?
Typically thousands. So we have thousands. Yep. I know, like that was actually funny because I saw a CBC thing that CBC did about that, and they were going around asking like the average person, like, how many recalls do you think happen? And people are like, I don't know, like 5 or 10. Yeah. Like, oh no, like this year we've had thousands, and people are like, what?
So how do we have access? Because obviously on like CP24, CBC, there's only like, I guess, the major ones that ever we hear about.
Yeah.
Like I've definitely not heard 1,000 recalls in, like, since I've been alive, maybe all put together since I've been born. So how do we find out what's going on and which recalls are happening?
Sure. So you can go to the CFIA has a recall list. So you can actually get it subscribed to your phone. So whenever there's any kind of recall, I get a little ding on my phone letting me know that a new type of recall.
You got it set up already.
Yeah. So you can get like push notifications and stuff like that. CFIA has got some cool technology you can use. And I want to clarify. So getting into recalls, like there's actually 3 classifications for recalls. So there's class 3, which is there's a quality issue. So that may not necessarily mean that it's something that could hurt somebody. It means that something is wrong with the product. Like maybe it's a can of Pepsi and there's not enough Pepsi in the can. Maybe it's got a wrong label to it, but there's not necessarily is there something that's a food safety related issue. And then there's class 2, which is class 2 is there could be a food safety related issue to a limited group of people. And that could be like the product's not being sold to like a wide audience. Or the risk that, think of like a graph and like the 2 axes, one is size of the population infected and the other axis is the severity of the problem if it gets to people. So if there's not a lot, if the product is not going to a lot of people or if the severity of the issue is not very high, then it fits into a class 2 recall. And then there's a class 1 recall, which is like, this is going to a wide audience and this is going to kill people if it gets to them. So
this was interesting. I just pulled it up as you're talking. I see a whole bunch. So class 2, like you're talking about, I'm not gonna name the brand. Kettle chips recalled due to possible presence of pieces of glass.
Oh no, yes. I had a kettle chips like 2 weeks ago.
Right? And it, yeah, right there.
Where's the brand? Oh no, that's the brand I had too.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
it's same. Actually and it's interesting, you already know. It's interesting. You can they have Twitter access. You can actually tech savvy, like you can go on and get all the Twitter and all that kind of stuff, even though I don't use Twitter, but still interesting. Another great one here is smoked beef pastrami or listeria. That's the one that's in the news.
So I guess if it's a class 3, is that what makes it to like national news or what?
Class 1 goes national. Class 1.
Yeah, because class 3, you got meat pies recalled due to mold.
Okay, so it goes class 3 is the lowest, class 2 is like the middle one, class 1 is the top one. Okay.
Yeah, class 1s are like very dangerous stuff.
Okay.
Wait, I got a class 2 here with a E. coli, a generic E. coli. Why would that not be a class 1?
It depends on like if it's going to a wide audience, like is it a national distribution or is it like a single province that's having it or like 2 provinces? And then the second thing is what kind of E. coli is it? There's different types of E. coli strand. There's one E. coli that's out there right now. I'm trying to remember this the name of it. I think it's E. coli 0156, I think. I'm trying to remember the... It's one E. coli out there that's unlike the other E. coli strands. Is this one is like a very deadly pathogen, and this specific strand of E. coli has killed like a lot of Canadians just because of the nature of it. So,
I'm not allowed on this website because I just looked at it and there's beans recalled due to presence of insects.
Yep, happens all the time.
What do you mean it happens?
he just says so casually. He's like,
no, it's like, I've heard that one.
Just another day at the park.
I say that jokingly. There's like, I know there's like a low acid canned food guy that's going to like call me the next day and he's going to be like, you son of a bitch, you're talking about shit about the bean industry. I'm going to come down to Nova Scotia. And, so
I'm going to beat the beans out of you.
Yeah, beat the beans right out of you, boy.
So that urban myth that we all heard growing up about the hamburger with the rat in it or whatever, it could potentially be true.
Yeah,
like you always heard it was like an urban myth. Oh, I know a buddy of a buddy who bit into a hamburger and there was a piece of a rat in it. This could be potentially a true thing that happens.
You want me to scare the absolute shit out of you both? Yes, of you guys right now?
this is gonna be the part that
this is the hot take of the show right here. Food safety at restaurants is compulsory in Canada.
What do you mean?
You don't all food safety that's at restaurants in Canada is provincially regulated. Like there's no federal standard for food safety at restaurants.
But the province has their best interest in mind.
Yeah, your province has your best interest in mind. But like that means that you have provincial auditors go out and they may not be doing it to a federal standard. So like most, I'm not talking shit about like provincial, but I'm just saying like the difference between like provincials and federal is like the federal standard at least sets a cross standard of like transparency of like this is how we do it across everywhere in Canada, but certain provinces are going to behave in different ways.
So. Yeah. That is scary.
Yeah.
That is very scary.
Yeah.
When I was younger, when I was working at a fast food chain, we got a delivery of buns and there was actual flies packaged into the buns. I can't remember if we ended up using them or not.
I remember when I used to work in a restaurant. I'm not going to say where, who, or what, when, why, but I remember the full restaurant experience charred me for many, many years. Like I still to this day. Like I remember cleaning dishes. I'm like, oh, this is not clean. I need to like put them back through. They're like, no, just rinse it quick and put it out there. Nobody will notice when there's food on the plate. I'm like, no. Like how can you pass food safety? They're like, nobody comes by and checks. I'm like, oh my god. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm not going to say like there's tons of federal CFIA employees going around doing inspections like constantly to all the companies in Canada all the time. But like you look at provincial resources and they're going to be, there's more, I believe now, I may be wrong. There's good, again, like no matter what I say, it's going to be controversial and someone's going to bash my nose over it. But to my knowledge, there's more restaurants in Canada than there are food processors.
Yeah, and obviously, especially that makes
when
sense.
You, yeah, and when you combine like food processors, transport companies, food service, like you combine all that together, all those guys, like even the food service companies, like the companies you mentioned, like had the buns and they packaged it to your restaurant, that's food service. They're producing food and they're shipping it to you. So that company, both the food service company that's moving the logistics of the bread to you and the company that produces that bread, those guys have to be certified under food safety, under whatever schema they are, whether or not it be federal standard of Canada or whether it be a GFSI standard because their supplier says so, whether like say, I don't know, like
I'm gonna throw an interesting mix because I'm like this whole thing's boggling my mind now. But as we're moving into the final mile kind of delivery, do you think there'll be a point where we're gonna be doing food safety on the guys delivering your groceries to your house?
Or you're like the Uber Eats guy.
Yeah, the Uber Eats guy. Like maybe. what do you know what's in this car? What if it's sitting next to a can of gas? I'm not saying not knocking any restaurants, I'm not knocking any Uber Eats guys, but we're just talking about food safety and how we relate. But like how do you know he doesn't have something like a Clorox that open, it's spilled, he's like, oh shit, yeah. Oh, I'm gonna clean that up and we're good to go.
Yeah, like these, to my knowledge, these guys don't need to, I don't know, like I'm not even gonna bother saying that. Like I'm not sure, I don't know what Uber Eats does for food safety. And for all of these, like, I don't know how to like group these kind of like companies that like Uber Eats and like DoorDash and like
final mile food delivery kind of guys, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So like those kind of companies, like, I don't know if there's like an accepted standard that all these companies meet. To my knowledge, they're tech companies, so I don't think they would have to. Probably but
not. Yeah, yeah, probably not.
But I'm not going to go out on a limb and say, oh, they all do this. Like, I honestly have no idea what they do. So
is there like, since we kind of touched upon it, is it in the restaurant business? Like there's HACCP for the manufacturer and the wholesale. Is there something similar in the restaurant business? So when I'm going out to a restaurant, I can look for a logo and go, hey, they're HACCP. I'm good to eat here.
Well, like restaurants, like that's what I meant before. And I should clarify, like restaurants, the HACCP is compulsory. You don't have to follow HACCP if you're a restaurant. food safety, you're going to have to meet whatever provincial food safety standard is put in front of you, so long as you're inspected to that standard.
Right.
But like, to my knowledge, like I can't think of a single restaurant at all that's got HACCP, to my knowledge, for the restaurant section. If they have a food processing section, maybe they have it there, but.
So there's no like, actual quality control for restaurants. That's like a third party that can say, hey, if you want to eat to a higher standard, you should eat with this certification. There's nothing that nobody that does that, yeah. Sounds like.
I guess outside of the provincial, what you're saying, provincial certification.
Yeah, not to my knowledge.
You know, if you go to a restaurant, there's like the green thing on the side.
Yeah.
That's the thing that's popping in my head that I see every restaurant have.
Well, you know, like the fast food, like we deal with like Martin Brower, they require HACCP and BRC and all that kind of stuff. They require that level of engagement. And although I know that when it gets down to the consumer, they have that all the way through. But we're talking about the store level, right?
Yeah.
So the process to get to that restaurant is maybe HACCP, but once it gets to that restaurant, are they HACCP? Is my
Well, I guess what I'm saying, so the actual restaurant is not HACCP, it's just the provincial, there's a provincial body that regulates that.
Yep.
Yeah, but like you said, the provincial body, how often does an auditor go out to a restaurant?
I don't know, like that'll probably vary. Like in Nova Scotia, it's Department of Environment, and it depends on the region, it depends on the kind of restaurant. So I don't
depends on the, know. Depends on the budget, depends on the government that's in. Like there's tons of, like it should be not dependent on that.
It depends on
like,
much tax.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
So there are like regular scheduled, like for example, like there's regular scheduled certification inspections, but like for just like general purpose audits, I don't know like what's the cadence of that in the province of Nova Scotia. Cause like honestly, like my knowledge of like the functionality of certifications for restaurant for provincial food safety is very limited. Cause again, it's my knowledge to a federal standard.
Yeah. No, we just got off that topic and it kind of was a segue and I get that. So maybe we can kind of bring it back. What is the, maybe give a story for us here, Matt, as we're approaching almost an hour and we're gonna probably wind down. But what's your favorite story? What was your shocking story that you kind of saw and heard of a food manufacturer that was getting away from something and you kind of put them in line? And what, like your best success story?
Oh, geez, like the first 50 are like retracted. I can't even talk about them publicly. Goodness, like I'd have a lawyer like calling me.
You know what you're talking about. You can't talk about this.
I don't like let me think about that for a second. anyone that I mention, I know that if they hear this, they'll definitely give me an earpiece because they're like, yeah, you're talking about me.
Just use fictitious names. You can even use our names, Matt and
Karen. Or maybe just have a story that you know of in the industry. Maybe it's not pertaining to like exactly you and your experience.
I'll do a one up. Like I know like a few auditors that have like audited to third party standards, and some of them have shared to me their stories that I can say. Like one of them, they were auditing, and I don't want to say the name of the company. I'm not going to say the brand. I'm not going to say the location. I'm not going to like say any of that stuff. But they were auditing a maple syrup plant, and like a weird thing is this thing in the food industry called food adulteration. Have you guys heard about it before?
Food adulteration. Alteration or like food cheating on food?
Food cheat, like basically fraud in food.
Okay.
Food adulteration. So what that means is that you have food and you're basically just lying about what that food is. So an example is the most, and I know this because I've talked to a lot of people about this particular kind of commodity, but is in cooking oils. So like a lot of time cooking oils are like very like fish is like another one where people lie about what kind of fish you're eating, for example.
Yeah, like red snappers used, but it's not really a red snapper often.
Yeah, haddock and pollock and stuff like that. Like so yeah, there's like all kinds of like quick like little cheap substitutions you can put in there so that you know like, oh, I'm gonna sell it to them for X when really it's worth Y and I get to keep this nice margin on the sale then. Capitalism ho. So it's this one company that I heard from an auditor what they were doing, and this is like super duper illegal to do in Canada, food adulteration on maple syrup. So they were straight up taking maple syrup and they were mixing it with corn syrup.
No.
Yeah, you can't. And the tricky thing about it is you can't, like the normal person, when you mix the two together, can't tell the difference between maple syrup versus that mix if you mix it at a certain percentage.
Right.
So this company was straight up doing that, and the auditor caught them and is like, hey,
Well, maple syrup is a very natural symbol here in Canada.
Yes, exactly. Like in Canada, it's probably like the worst country to do that kind of food adulteration.
Well, wasn't one of the worst Canada heists was with maple syrup in Quebec?
Yeah, Montreal, no. Quebec. Yeah,
there's a whole, I think, Netflix
documentary on it too. Yeah,
maple syrup mafia.
That's right.
Yeah, I know. It's, like it's... Americans were making fun of us for God knows how long. They're like, oh,
they're like, this is the most Canadian thing.
They sold maple syrup. But even on that topic, that it's funny. But even the government did that in a sort of a way too, with canola oil. I read this recently, that canola oil doesn't exist outside of Canada. Mm-hmm. There's no such thing as canola oil outside of Canada. Mm-hmm. I forget the name of the flower that it is. And we wanted to make it more Canadian size. So we called it canola oil. So it's Canadian oil.
Yeah.
Yep.
And that's what canola oil is. There's no flower that's a canola.
I guess most people probably buy, I think it's like a sunflower oil, right?
No, it's not even, you might know what it is, Matt, but and then that's in your margarine, they write canola oil. And I don't think we can even export that margarine anywhere else in the world because it says canola oil on it. And I thought that was pretty neat.
Yep.
Things that you can learn. Like,
yeah, like, again, like the food industry is like this weird thing. If you want to get into the crazy hot takes, we'll have to take that off a podcast and I can tell you some nightmare stories, but for legal purposes, I will not pursue any of them.
Off the record, secret recordings.
Yeah.
So Matt, maybe the last thing, you know, what's one thing that we should all look out for? What's one bit of advice that you would give to anybody that wants to start up a warehouse, a food manufacturing, anything to do with food? What's the first thing that you should do? What's some word of advice that you want to kind of finish off the show off with us tonight?
If you want to get started in the food industry, it's kind of becoming kind of token in hand that you need to have anything in the food industry, you should have food safety. And it's just becoming that food safety is becoming really the handshake between companies as they do trade now. Just because the United States has modernized under the Food Safety Modernization Act, we've modernized under the Safe Food Canadian regs. It's just, it's us moving to kind of play catch up with other international bodies of food safety. Because one of the great things about food safety is that the more modern your market becomes with food safety, the more higher standards you get, the less that other countries can sell to you because your standard of food safety supersedes them for your market. Mm-hmm. So it becomes a great trade barrier if you want to keep imports out of your country.
Interesting. So just keep raising the standards of what you qualify for food safety, right? But I mean, then again, when we have agreements like CERTA, is it CERTA? No, what is it? European, Canadian European Trade Agreement. So CETA.
Yeah, CETA. Yeah.
They have to adhere to our rules and we have to adhere to their rules. So it kind of lifts both of us up too at that point, I guess.
Yep. Yeah, there's harmonization laws in there saying like if you do this for food in Canada, that means that you do this for food over in Europe, and that comes everything that's like on a commodity level too. Because like for example, like cheese in Canada isn't necessarily done as cheese in the United States, which isn't necessarily done as cheese in Europe. So it's like, okay, well, if you guys have cheddar of this classification in Canada and we have this cheese over here, are they similar? Are they the same? Like, did you process these the same? Are they the same commodity or are they different commodities?
An example, like beer too, like purity laws of Germany for beer. You can only have four ingredients.
Yep,
here exactly. We can put anything we want in it.
Yeah, exactly. So a great example that a consultant used for me that he works with brokers and he said, like, if you're say a meat processor in Canada and you make hot dogs and then you try to go over to China and you try to sell hot dogs to people over there, will they understand what you're selling when you say hot dog? Like, do you have to have some kind of classification code for them so that they understand that?
I guess it's a different meaning for a hot dog.
I'm not going to touch that one.
You brought it up. I wasn't even going there and you said it. I was like, oh, that's a funny segue.
Yeah. So, if you sell a certain commodity in Canada, does that mean it's the same commodity somewhere else? And then that gets into like international standards, gets into like HS codes of like what your commodity is and how that meets like a known international standard to sell into another market. So yeah, it gets really complicated, but the best thing you can do is go out, get yourself find like a good consulting group that can help you develop a food safety program, get educated on what you need to do for food safety, because it's kind of just becoming the market standard across the board for everybody. And to sit there and the irresponsible thing to think about is like, I'm just not going to do food safety, or I'm going to try to put it off for as long as I can because it's just a sunk cost and I don't get anything out of it. Some of the most successful food processors I know that had very rapid growth from startup to like $25 million exits is like companies that put food safety in early stage.
Yep.
And then they use that food safety program to understand their weaknesses. One of the great features of a food safety program is it's going to tell you where your problems are.
Yep.
If you're doing it correctly, it's going to say, you guys have a human resource issue over here. You guys have you're not doing appropriate tasks over here. You guys suck at monitoring over here. You guys aren't storing chemicals properly over here. So it's going to tell you where all your problems are as a company. As long as you follow that standard, you're going to grow. It's going to grow. It's going to make you a more competitive company over time.
Awesome. Well, Matt, thank you so much for joining us. We had a great time and appreciate you taking the time out of your day and educating us on food safety. I know I learned a lot.
Yeah, I feel like we just scratched the surface.
I'm going home and inspecting all my food now. You know, I'm going to make sure my wife is HACCP certified in our kitchen from this day forward. And, you know, it was a pleasure having you. I hope you had a great time. And I hope if you have anybody has questions for Matt, always reach out to him. We'll post his info on the LinkedIn and our website once we have that up and going too. And then obviously he'll be able to answer any of your questions you have with food safety. And, you know, Matt, again, thank you so much for joining us tonight.
Thanks, hey, thanks for having me, guys. Anytime you want, just let me know. I'll come back, talk about food.
Perfect.
Have yourself a good one, guys.
Yeah, you too. Where's the stop button?